any two people could embark on in their whole lifetime. Now, some of you may think adventure. Yeah, it really is an adventure, all right. And there are more than one kind of adventure, of course. I heard about a couple who, they had a little adventure on a Saturday morning. They had just gotten up and were just kind of getting started in the day. And they'd already had a little conflict with one another. It wasn't a big deal, but, you know, they'd said a couple of things that weren't very nice to one another. And she was in the process of getting dressed, putting on her dress and everything, and she needed to get the zipper on the back of her dress up, and so she asked her husband if he would help her with the zipper on the back of her dress. And he said, sure, I'll help you. And he walked over and he took the zipper and he went zip, 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 and left it down and walked away. Well, you know, she didn't quite know what to make of that. But the day went by, and that afternoon she was coming home from shopping, and she pulled in the drive and got out of the car, got the groceries out of the car, and then she noticed that her husband was underneath the other car in the drive working on it. And, of course, he was half under the car and half out from under the car, and you know the half that was under the car was from the waist up. And she looked the situation over, set the groceries down on the trunk of the car, walked over, reached down, took the zipper on his pants, and went zip, zip, zip. Picked up her groceries and triumphantly walked in the house, thinking that she had gotten revenge for that morning, huh? Well, she walked into the kitchen, and there was her husband standing there. She said, what are you doing here? He said, what do you mean, what am I doing here? I live here. She said, well, who's that out under the car? Oh, that's Joe next door. He's helping me fix the car. So, you know, they figured they'd better check up on Joe. And so they went rushing out the front and looked under the car. And Joe was out cold. When she had pulled this little trick with his zipper, he raised up, hit his head on the bottom of the car, and knocked himself out. Now, the moral of that story is that we got to be careful about these little conflicts with one another that happen in the morning and especially on Saturday, because they can lead to some very tragic results. I was telling that story to a group one time, and a guy came up. Now, that's true. It's a true story. I knew that from the time I've heard it, first heard it. But a guy came up to me afterwards, and he says, Jack, that isn't the end of the story. He says, I know those people. They live down the street from me. And that is not the end of the story. I said, well, tell me the end of the story. What happened? He says, well, Joe didn't come too. So they got very concerned, and they went in, dialed 911, called the paramedics, and they come roaring out in the ambulance. And of course, they pulled Joe very gently out from underneath the car and began to put him on the stretcher to get him in the ambulance. And in the process of doing all this, of course, they want to know what happened. So this couple is telling them what happened to Joe. Well, these two ambulance drivers got to laughing so hard that they dropped Joe. He fell off the stretcher and broke his shoulder. Well, when Joe finally came back to his senses and found out what had happened, of course, you know the kind of a society that we live in today. It's a suing society. And so that's what Joe did. He ended up suing his neighbors and the ambulance company and the two paramedics. I mean, the whole schmear. And so, you know, it really is critical that we learn how to handle those Saturday morning conflicts between one another. It could lead to something very, very tragic. But, you know, conflict in a marriage provides us with a tremendous opportunity to learn something about each other. Now, maybe not right at the time it's happening. But later, after the heat has gone out of the situation and we've gotten back in control of our emotions, what do we do about that type of thing? Well, one of the things that Carol and I have learned over the years, and we're still trying to practice it every opportunity we get, is to go back and talk about those things. Maybe you can do it within a few minutes. Maybe it's not until the next day. But to take the time, sometime down the road, to talk about what happened. Why did the conflict take place in the first place? And one of the things that we've learned as a result of doing it is that many of our conflicts arise because of our differences between one another. We are really opposites. And that's why we've written this book called Opposites Attack. Because what we have learned as we've interacted with a lot of other couples, and it's been our experience, that when a couple first meet, fall in love, get engaged, up to that point, these opposites attract one another, right? But then we get married. We walk down the aisle and say the I do's. And it isn't very many months into the cruise before these same things that seem to attract us to one another are now getting on our nerves. And as a result, from time to time, we end up attacking each other because of the differences. Or perhaps it's because of a lack of understanding of what these differences are all about. Huh? We had an incident happen, and we're still discovering this about ourselves. We're still learning new things that are different in our responses, in our attitudes, in our values, that are different from one another in a little different perspective. It's been no more than four and a half years ago. We were in Scotland. And we had just finished up a wonderful weekend conference with a group of Scottish couples over on the west coast of Scotland, probably about half the size of this group. And it had been a terrific week. We had spent with many of them on a personal basis in their homes the week before the conference. But we were kind of worn out and tired, and so we had rented a little station wagon type car, and we were going to take a week and do Scotland, play some golf, see Scotland, and really have ourselves a little rested vacation. Well, Sunday afternoon, after all the festivities were over, we climbed into the car after loading all of our luggage and our golf clubs, and started off down the road. Got to the little hotel we were going to stay that first night, and went in and checked in. Then I came out to get the luggage, and I tried to get the back door of this station wagon open, and I couldn't. It just would not open. The handle wouldn't turn, and I couldn't get the thing open. I tugged, I pulled, I got my feet up on the bumper. Nothing worked. So finally, in desperation, I opened the back door and then lugged the suitcases over the back seat and then into the hotel. And then the next morning, the same thing in reverse. Later that day, we stopped to play golf. And it was the same thing with the golf clubs over the back seat. Well, this went on for 2 days. And the third morning, we were checking out of the hotel we were staying at, and I asked the man behind the desk if he knew of a place in town where I could get this door fixed on this dumb car. So he told me where to go, went down the road, found the garage, talked to the mechanic, showed him the problem, asked him if he could fix it. He says, sure. How long will it take? Oh, maybe half an hour. So I knew that Carol would not want to just stand around and wait for this guy to fix the car. She's not that kind of a person. So that across the street was this beautiful old abbey, a church. And I said, honey, why don't you go over and look around the abbey and come on back in a half an hour and we'll be ready to go. So she did. And the guy got the car fixed. And I was opening and slamming the door, make sure it worked good. And then after I knew it worked, I was beginning to straighten out the luggage. I mean, we've been living with this mess now for 2 days, huh? And so I was straightening things out, and we just kind of tossed stuff in, and the golf clubs, and getting things organized the way I like to have them. And as I was doing this, Carol came walking across the street and saw what I was doing, and she said,
why don't you leave that till later?
Because I want to straighten it out right now.
Well, don't get mad at me.
Well, you always argue with me. And she walked away. Well, we climbed in the car and started off down the road. And, of course, it was rather quiet. neither of us said much. Now, I would guess that maybe 10 or 12 minutes went by at the most. And over here in the passengers, over here in the passenger side in England, Carol started to chuckle, just kind of a low laugh, you know. And then I started to laugh, and we were laughing at ourselves. I mean, this was a dumb stunt that we had pulled back there. It was really not something that we were used to doing very often, but we did it. It just happened, you know. Well, I don't know where you're at in this matter of laughing at yourself, but you probably should get in the habit of doing it once in a while, because you're a very funny person. Whether you realize that or not, you do some dumb things and say some dumb things, and you know, you just need to learn to laugh at yourself. And it's very therapeutic. It not only helps you, but it helps the family. And especially if you can let the family join and laugh at you with yourself, you know, that helps. Laughter is a very, very good thing in a family, and especially between a husband and a wife. And so we were laughing at ourselves primarily. Well, then we apologized to each other because we'd said some kind of mean things. But then we began to talk about what had happened. I mean, we didn't have anything else to do, and so we began to reflect on it. Now, I've got to set the stage for this, because this incident happened about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago. I mean, we'd been married about 35 years at that time. Now, if that same type of thing had happened 20 years earlier in our marriage, it would have ruined our whole day. It wouldn't have been over in 15 or 20 minutes like it was that morning. And that was 9:30 in the morning. And so when I say ruin the whole day, that's a long day. It would have probably been late that night before we had got it settled, if it had happened 20 years earlier. But the difference was that over those 20 years or so, through God's help, through the Word of God, through learning some things from Him and the Spirit of God, we were able to get over the hurdle that prevents us so often from breaking through conflict quickly and dealing with it in a loving, kind way. And that the element that keeps us from doing that more than any other is pride, right? I mean, that's what we all have to deal with in a conflict situation. Because in the early days of our relationship, if that same type of thing had happened, the thing that would have welled up within me was, there is no way she's going to win this argument. I wouldn't have said that to her, but I would have said it to myself. And she would have been saying something similar. And so we would have back and forth, jockeying for position, the power play, who was going to win, who was going to lose. And that would have gone on all day. We got to work on that, folks. We got to let God deal with pride in our lives. And we got to be willing to take the humble position once in a while. We're going to be talking about conflict either tomorrow morning or Sunday morning and how to handle it, because it's a constant thing in our lives as married couples. But how do we deal with it successfully so that it becomes not a liability in our relationship, but an asset, huh? Well, we began to talk about this. What had really happened back there in front of the garage? That, I mean, we only said four sentences to each other. She said two and I said two. And Matt started it off. And it was so quick. I mean, what you saw up here was almost identical to what happened there in front of that garage. Just the back and forth. And so we began to analyze it. And we discovered something that has been an invaluable lesson to us ever since. We violated, in those four sentences, we violated at least three basic principles of good interpersonal relationships. Now, you know, you say four sentences and violate three principles, that's going some, huh? But we would never have found that out if we hadn't stopped to talk about it and analyze what had happened there. Now, the first thing that we did that was really wrong was the first thing that Carol said. In fact, the first word that Carol said. You remember what the first word out of her mouth was when she came back across the street, saw what I was doing? What was the word? Why? Why are you doing that now? Now, how many of you really enjoy being asked a why question of that kind under similar circumstances? How many of you really enjoy that? Let me see your hands. Well, I see we don't have any masochists in the crowd. You see, why questions under similar circumstances, when asked of a spouse or a friend or a relative or a child, a son or a daughter, are threatening. They're intimidating. And they draw a defensive response, which was what mine was. I was defending what I was doing because she was challenging it. You know, you're backing the car out of the garage and you've got a passenger in the front seat. And you pull onto the street and you get to the first corner and you turn right. And the person in the passenger seat turns to you and says, "Why are we going this way?" Don't you like that? Huh? Boy. Or it's Sunday morning, you know, and you're getting ready for church and you're going to really knock them dead that morning. You put on, you know, what you consider to be the best shirt, tie, sport coat, slacks combination that you've got. And you come marching down to breakfast, all dolled up. You sit down to breakfast. Your wife brings you breakfast, sits it down in front of you, sits down across from you, takes a long look at you and says, "Why are you wearing that tie with that coat?" Love it, huh? Really love it. You see, the person who does that is not really asking a question, are they? It's disguised as a question, but they are really making a statement, only that it comes out in the form of a question. You see, that's what Carol was doing. She wasn't asking me, "Why are you doing that now?" What she was saying is, if I had my way, we wouldn't be messing around with the luggage now. Or the passenger sitting next to you. If I was driving, we wouldn't have turned right, we'd have turned left. Or, you know, the wife that comments on the tie. You know, she's not really asking a question. If I had my way, you wouldn't be wearing that tie with that coat. So we're really making a statement that has to do with some usually very little thing that the other person is doing differently than we would do it. And that is what elicits the why question. If we find ourselves doing that frequently with our spouse, it is a pretty good barometer of our acceptance level of our spouse. And what it means is, if we're doing it quite a bit, it means that we're not very accepting of a lot of little things that they do that are probably a little different than we might do them. And usually, as I mentioned, they are very little things. I mean, straightening out the luggage in the trunk of a car, how big a deal can that be, huh? Or turning right or left at the first corner, that's not a big deal. Or the tie you wear with a sport, that's not a big deal. So it's usually little things. And so check yourself up. It may be something that you really need to work on in your relationship with each other, because it draws the other person, it puts them on the defensive. And that's what it did to me. And of course, the second thing, so that was the first thing we learned. The second thing had to do with my response. You know, Carol says, "Well, why are you doing that now?" And I said, "Well, sweetheart, this seemed to be a..." Isn't that what I said? That isn't what I said. I said, "Because I want to straighten it out now." And she said, "Well, don't get angry." Well, where did she get the idea I was angry? Tone of voice, huh? Communication experts tell us that we communicate much, much more by our tone of voice than we do the words we speak. Especially on a one-to-one situation. And especially with somebody that knows us pretty well. They pick up on those little things. And Carol, she picked up right. I was a little peeved. And it came out in the tone of voice. We need to be careful about our tone of voice. One of our problems is that we seem to do that more with people we love than with people we just are acquaintance of. Huh? You would never do that at work. Or, well, I shouldn't say never, but you would be very careful about who you did that with at work, coming back with an angry response. But at home, well, we just need to watch it, don't we? Our tone of voice. The third thing had to do with the last statement I made. Remember what I said just before she walked away? I said, "You always argue with me." Well, now that's a pretty dogmatic statement, isn't it? You always argue with me. Carol and I argue once in a while. She does argue with me from time to time, but not always. She doesn't always argue with me. And yet, when we do get angry, oftentimes what comes out is an accusatory statement in the superlative, isn't it? I mean, it's not just once in a while, it's always or never. You never! And let's face it, folks, we're all human beings and none of us are that consistent with hardly anything, that we always do something or we never do something. There may be a few exceptions to that. So those were three things that we learned just from four sentences. And by taking the time, just driving along in the car, to analyze it. Now, you know, we got into the place in our relationship by then that we could talk about something like this without getting mad at one another or one of us getting mad and one crying. You know, if that happens, then you got to back off. Don't try to continue to analyze a conflict situation when one of you is angry or when your emotions are all wrapped up in it. So back off. But commit yourself to come back to it. You know, in 24 or 48 hours. But as we continued to talk, the thing that really came to light was why the whole thing started in the first place. And it wasn't because of anything we said. It was because of the way we are different from each other in a very significant way. And we had never we knew about this difference. We'd known about that ever since 6 months into our marriage. But we had not applied it to that kind of a situation before. You see, why was I so eagerly straightening out the trunk of the car now that I could get to it? Why was I doing it? Now, some of you sitting here in this audience, you would have been doing exactly the same thing. The minute you could get that trunk door open, you would have been at it. Boy, straightening out the luggage, getting things organized, cleaning up the mess, throwing out the junk. You've been doing exactly the same thing I was doing. And the reason is because you're a perfectionist. And you've been living in that mess for 2 days now. And now you could get at it. And I had the time to do it. Well, Carol is just the opposite of me in this area. She is the opposite of a perfectionist. By the way, someone mentioned that a perfectionist is someone who takes great pains and gives them to everybody else. And, you know, I feel sorry for, I really do, I feel sorry at times for those of you who have to live with a perfectionist. Carol has put up with me for 41 years, and I know there are problems latent in that. But Carol is just the opposite of me. Now, I don't know whether you've ever stopped to think about what is the opposite of a perfectionist. But I've given a great deal of thought to that. And Carol is not sloppy. That might be the word that would come to some of your minds. Carol is not sloppy. Carol is fast. Now, you think about that. You see, the philosophy of a perfectionist is, if you don't have time to do it right, wait until you do have time to do it right. That's the basic underlying philosophy on which a perfectionist operates. Well, someone who has to live with somebody like that, who has that philosophy, and they are fast, it can drive them up a wall at times, and vice versa. So there's the situation. You got perfectionist Jack straightening out the luggage in the back of the car, and fast Carol comes walking across the street and sees what he is doing. What is on her mind? Let's get out of here. Let's get going. We got all of Scotland to conquer, and we only got a week to do it. What are you messing around with the luggage now for? Let's go. That was what she was thinking about. Well, man, it all started with that. And it happened so quickly. She said what she said. I said my sentence. She said hers. I said mine. And there we were. Just in seconds. And it all started because of a significant difference between the two of us. We are almost opposites in this area. Now, as I said, that's not a new revelation to us. We discovered that 6 months into our marriage. We've been working on it. We've been trying to make that work for us rather than against us. And the thing that we've discovered is that is what many couples fail to do. They discover a difference between them. They make no effort in understanding one another. They make no effort to communicate on the issue at all and find out what's really going on inside of the other person. And so they continue to drift from one conflict to the next over the same basic issue of a difference between the two of them, and they never talk about it. And they never learn. And therefore, they never understand each other. And fortunately, early in our relationship, Carol and I began to do that. I don't know where we got the idea. I have no idea where it came from. Because, boy, in the days that we were first married, there weren't any marriage seminars. There weren't any Christian books written on marriage. There weren't any tapes. There weren't any videos. I mean, you had to learn on your own. And there isn't a one of us in this crowd, probably, that has had a course prior to getting married on how marriage should work, huh? Any of you had a course on marriage before? You know, we prepare for a profession, huh? And we spend years getting ready for our life's work. But how much time do we spend getting ready for marriage before we get married? Most of us, zero. We got to learn the hard way, but we got to work at it. That makes it that much greater a challenge, huh? And so, you know, over the years we struggled with some of these things, and we picked little things up here, and we'd learn from other couples, and we both, fortunately, had good role models in our parents. They both loved the Lord. Both sets of parents loved the Lord. You know, they weren't world beaters when it came to their marriage relationship. They probably wouldn't have gotten a gold medal in the Olympics of marriage. But they had a good thing going between the two of them. And we grew up with that. For instance, just one thing I can remember about our home. I know that my mom and dad had fights. But I never saw one and I never heard one. Because they never did it in front of us kids. Well, you know, I learned something from that. I didn't think about it at the time, but as I look back on it later, and they struggled. We learned stuff from our parents, and Carol had the same experience. We got to work at these things. We got to work at them. Now, when we first got married, perfectionist Jack out here, fast Carol out here, that's about how far apart we were. That's as far as I can reach, so that's how far apart we were. But as the years went by, we learned from each other. We learned from the Lord. And as a result of that, we changed. We didn't lose our identity as an individual person. But we saw the value and the good aspects of the other person's point of view and habits. And so as time went by, we grew closer together in this. Through interaction with each other and the Word of God affecting our lives and the Spirit of God dealing with certain things in our lives, He knocked off the rough edges, and we became closer together on this. And as a result, we became better people, and we knew how to handle this better. And I'd say right now in our lives, we're probably about right there. I mean, that's a long way, baby, from out here, huh? But we've learned that there are just certain things that we probably shouldn't try to do together. Now, there's a lot of things that we do together, and we've learned how to do them. We've learned from it. We've grown as a result of it. There's a little verse over in Proverbs 27:17 that beautifully describes this process. And it says, iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens another. Isn't that great? It's a terrific description of what I believe God wants to happen in marriage. I think it's a great part of God's plan to have two people come together and live together and rub shoulders for a lifetime and help one another grow, to learn from each other, knock off the rough edges. Iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens another. You take two pieces of metal and you rub them together. What happens? Well, several things. Heat develops. That's sure a good description of marriage. Sparks fly. That happens in marriage. But another thing that happens, if you take those pieces of metal and you rub them together just at the right angle, they sharpen each other. And I really believe that that is part of God's plan for bringing two people together and having them say, I do, to one another and commit themselves to each other for the rest of their lives so that we can grow together and make these adjustments and changes and modifications that make us into a better person, a more Christ-like person. But over the years, we've learned that there are certain things we just shouldn't do together. Like, we don't wash a car together. I don't know whether you can picture that or not. Here's the car sitting in the drive, and Carol's got her side of the car, and I got my side of the car. She's got her bucket and sponge, and I got my bucket and sponge. And we say, go. And so Carol goes, swish, 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 swish. And she says, I'm finished. And I'm still, over here working on the front fender. Perfectionist Jack. Of course, when somebody says, I'm finished, that means it's inspection time, right? Sure. So I walk around the car and I inspect. And I look over her side and I make some dumb statement like, you're finished? and that's all it takes. I get a bucket and sponge over my head. So we don't wash cars together. We don't hang wallpaper together. I think that's pretty obvious. I insist the lines be straight up and down. And to Carol, it really doesn't matter. And it doesn't to her. So we don't hang wallpaper. You learn those things as time goes by. Now, those are not very high priority items, though. I mean, washing the car and hanging wallpaper is not a very high priority item. Most things we work through. We learn how to make it work for us rather than against us. Well, a little bit about Carol and me now. But we would like to have you get to know us just a little bit better. And so we have worked out a little dialogue that we're going to do for you just so you can know us better. And remember now, we're on the subject of opposites attack, okay? This is still differences. Some big things, some little things. For instance, I'm nearsighted.
And I'm farsighted.
Now, that may not sound like a big deal until you're standing in church on Sunday morning trying to sing out of the same hymn book. Huh? Where do you hold it? We've both gotten bifocals now, and that helps.
I love romantic candlelight dinners.
That's okay. I do too. But you got to see what you're eating. I shop by using the Yellow Pages, Consumers Report, and the telephone.
Oh, but I want to see and smell and look at everything in town before I buy.
Yeah.
I love to explore old castles.
Listen, you've seen one castle. You've seen them all, huh? Right? I like all my shirts hung with the hangers facing in and the shirts facing to the left.
Can you believe that?
I don't care for fish, no matter how you try to disguise it.
And I like fish fixed almost any old way, but I don't like peanut butter.
Can you believe that? Somebody not liking peanut butter. My purpose on a driving trip is to get there.
Oh, but I want to see and explore everything as we go along. So I'll say, oh, let's stop and ride those dune buggies.
And I'll say, well, let's stop and watch. Next time we'll ride the dune buggies. I say, honey, let's skip the wedding reception.
And I say, well, maybe 2 hours will be long enough.
Uh-huh. I say, if you haven't played 18 holes, you really haven't played golf.
Hey, it's just a game.
I like the bottom line stated up front.
And I say, who needs a bottom line? I like bumpy rides, little planes, and roller coasters.
Whew, does she ever. She's got a cast iron stomach. Wow. When I'm sick, I like lots of attention, tender, loving care.
And when I'm sick, I want to pull the shades, have it totally quiet, and be left absolutely alone. Mm.
I like my steak medium and my coffee black.
Me too.
I like music soft and sweet.
Me too.
I like to get up early and get a start on the day.
Me too. Well, sometimes.
On a trip, I like to do the driving.
Honey, I love to have you.
I'm asleep when I hit the pillow.
And when I'm laying there trying to unwind, I am so glad you don't snore.
Mm. When I'm nervous, I get quiet.
And when I'm nervous, I start talking faster and faster.
But you know, through all the years and the differences and the similarities, the thing that has resulted in our working at these things and making them assets in our relationship rather than liabilities is we have become best friends. And so, you know, Carol Mayhall is my best friend here on this earth, and I know that I am her best friend. And that's a goal worth shooting for here in this whole arena of marriage. Another thing that's happened as a result of all this is that we've learned, well, I guess one way to put it is where our priorities are, or where they ought to be anyway. We don't always practice that, but the thing we've discovered is that there are two things that to us seem to be absolutely essential to the continued development and fulfillment of a marriage relationship between a husband and a wife that will make it rewarding for both of them. The first thing is that we do have to work at it. I've already mentioned that several times, but it's a vital ingredient in an ongoing, growing relationship between a husband and a wife. We've got to work at it. I'm not talking about, you know, you got 2 hours Thursday afternoon and you both got free. Now, what do we do to work at it? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making it a priority, about giving marriage our best shot, because it's here to stay. We committed ourselves to one another until death do us part. Huh? I got some notes down there. No, right there. Dr. David Hubbard, the president of Fuller Theological Seminary, makes a statement about marriage that I think hits the nail right on the head when it comes to this matter of priority. And here's what he says. Marriage does not demand perfection, but it must be given priority. It's an institution for sinners. No one else need apply. But it finds its fullest glory when sinners see it as God's way of leading us to his ultimate curriculum of love and righteousness. Now, you know, leave it to the president of a theological seminary to put marriage into the classroom. You know, he uses the word curriculum, for instance. But in a sense, he's got a point. And I think it's one of the things that we have learned over the years is that we're in school every day in this thing called marriage. If we've got our eyes open and our hearts open and our mind open, there are things that we can learn from each other every day. And as I mentioned earlier, I believe that is part of God's overall plan for marriage. I really believe it's one of the primary reasons that God brought Jack Mahal and Carol Hoeksema together, clear back there in Wheaton College in the Midwest, and then hooked us up together. I mean, we had a hard time getting together. We broke our engagement 3 times. You know, I'd give her the ring and she'd say yes, and we'd break it off and she'd give me the ring back, and I went back and forth 3 times. Well, you know, our friends thought that we would never make it, but listen, folks, we've had 41 years of a fantastic growing relationship. It hasn't always been easy. We've gone through some rough things together. We've had to fight for some things to make it work. But we have worked at it. And that's one of the things. We've got to work at it. The second thing is that we've got to develop a personal, intimate, daily, meaningful relationship with God. Now, some of you are sitting here and you're saying, well, what's the big deal on that? Why is that so important? Well, I think the primary reason is because God invented marriage. It was His idea. This isn't some phenomenon that man dreamed up. It's all over the world. Marriage is global. Carol and I have the privilege of traveling around the world. We've been in quite a number of different countries. Everywhere we go, there are married people. Huh? It's universal. Now, it always doesn't take the same form, and you know, there are different cultural things that enter into it, but they're married. Well, what does God have to say about marriage? I mean, if it's His idea, if He dreamed it up, if He is the one who way back there when the two of you were doing whatever you were doing on the college campus or at work or something and you met, you fell in love, and you got married, what does God have on His heart for your relationship? For you as a person who is intimately related to another person, what does God want to happen in that relationship? He's got a lot to say in this Bible, this book of His called the Bible, about what He wants to happen. Not only in the passages that deal specifically with marriage, but in a lot of other passages that have to do with just how two people can get along together well. The book of Proverbs, it's loaded with stuff on how to get along with another person. He's got a lot of ideas on that. And therefore, we need to develop a personal relationship with Him. I look upon marriage as a triangle. Not the kind that we often run into here on this earth, but the good kind. The husband, the wife, and God. Now, the Bible tells us, and this is God speaking, over in Jeremiah 9, 23 and 24. God is saying, He says, "Let not the rich man glory in his riches, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, but let him that glory or boast in this, that he knows and understands me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord." Now that's God speaking. What He is saying is, He said, if you really want to boast about something, boast about the fact that you're taking the time and the trouble to get to know and understand me, who I am, what I do, how I operate, how big I am, how I can help you, what I can do for you. And that's what I'm talking about here. That this husband and this wife get to know and understand God. That they communicate with Him. Yeah. And one of the things that Carol and I have discovered, and we've talked to other couples who have found the same thing to be true, that the closer they get to God as individual people, the closer this husband gets to God, to understand Him, to know Him, the closer this wife gets to God, as they grow in that together, the closer they get to each other. Huh? That's what's happened with us. We share with each other spiritually what God is doing in our life, what He is saying to us from the Word of God. We talk about God's principles together that relate to our marriage relationship and how we can, how does this fit? How does this apply? So those are the two things that we feel are absolutely vital for any ongoing, growing, working, fulfilling, rewarding marriage relationship. We've got to work at it, and we've got to give God really His rightful place in our relationship. Develop a personal, daily, intimate relationship with Him. Now, one more thing, and then Carol is going to come up. Not only do we need to get to know God, huh? Each of us, as a husband and as a wife, but we need to get to know each other. Right? Right? Right. Okay. I want to make sure you're with me on it. How well do you know your spouse? Well, let's find out. You got a piece of paper and a pencil? Or a pen or something? Something to write on. This is everybody. Three questions. Question number one. Now, write these out, but there's no way you can cheat on this, even if you look on each other's papers, because you're going to have different answers. Write down on the paper, what is your spouse's favorite color? What is your spouse's favorite color? Now, if they don't have a favorite color, well, you know, that's an answer. Question number two. What is your spouse's favorite foreign food? Foreign food, like Chinese, Mexican, Italian. Thirdly, what is the color of your spouse's toothbrush? Now, what I'm going to have you do is stand up and share your answers, but please don't get in a fight over this. I mean, these are not big deals, but it's just a little exercise to do. Okay, now stand up and then share and see how you did. Okay, can you hang in there for about another 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Huh? 9:15. We'll try and wrap it up by 9:15. Okay?
One of my very favorite cartoonists is Charles Schulz, who, as you know, writes Peanuts cartoons. And this one is just classic for what we want to continue on today and this evening and tomorrow morning. Peppermint Patty is sitting under a tree. And she's saying to Charlie Brown, "I'm not beautiful, Chuck. Do you think I'm not beautiful because I'm being punished for something I did in a former life?" And he says, well, don't say anything, Chuck. I know I'm not beautiful. Don't say anything, Chuck. Say something, Chuck. He says, "What? I mean, maybe it's wrong to complain about not being beautiful. Do you think it's wrong? Do you, Chuck?" I suppose I'm being kind of silly, you know. Do you think I'm being silly? Do you, Chuck? Just about this time, Snoopy comes along and gives Peppermint Patty a great big smack on the cheek. The last frame shows Peppermint Patty walking away with Snoopy, and she's saying, "I'm glad you came along, Snoopy. Talking with Chuck isn't very satisfying." Well, it's obvious that Charlie Brown does not understand girls. But on the other hand, most of us do not really understand one another. And there is so much to understand, isn't there? We have to understand each other's personalities, temperament types, extrovert-introvert differences, backgrounds, idiosyncrasies, and on and on and on. Most of us would fail the course if we really were tested on what we know about one another. It has been said that God gave us two eyes with which to see things from a different point of view. When we only have one eye, we see things flat. But when we have two eyes, we have dimension, perspective on things. We see the world round. I think that is a beautiful picture of marriage. God gave us two distinct and different personalities so that together we can become more than either one of us could by ourselves. so that as we complete one another, we'll be able to see the world as it were in the round. Proverbs 24:3-4 says, "By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. And by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches." But most of us come to marriage with a real lack of understanding. We're kind of like the couple that Elizabeth Elliot tells about in a little book called Discipline, The Glad Surrender. She says this, "A couple I know had been married only a week or two when the wife went out shopping. The husband wondered what he might do for her while she was gone that would please and surprise her and show her how much he loved her. A brilliant plan came to mind. He got down on his hands and knees and scrubbed the kitchen floor. It was a demeaning task in his opinion, and he felt exceedingly humble while performing it. How amazed Anne would be. He waited in eager anticipation for her return, thinking how blessed it is to give. She drove in the driveway, breezed into the kitchen, set the grocery bags on the counter, and glanced at the floor. 'Oh, the floor's clean. Thank you, honey,' was all she said, and went about putting things away. The man told me he went into a 3-day funk. He was hurt. He was insulted. He was not properly appreciated. And the blessing of giving drained away in an instant because he had not received the kind of thanks he had expected. Anne had no idea what the trouble was. What she did not know is that her husband had never heard of a man's doing such a thing as scrubbing a floor for his wife, especially voluntarily, having thought of it all by himself. What he did not know was that in his wife's family, no woman ever did the job. Her father considered it a man's job and did it as a matter of course." You know, we smile at something like that, and yet how very often some little thing like that, that is not talked about, begins to drive us apart and becomes that wedge that can deeply wound us. The Bible talks about marriage as two becoming one flesh. And of course that means physical. We'll be talking about that tomorrow evening. But it also means we feel becoming one in heart, becoming one in vision, becoming one in goals, becoming one in everything, and becoming best friends. But that takes working at least three things I need to have to be best friends. First of all, I need God's help. There's no way that any of us are going to be able to put the things into practice that God wants us to have in our marriage without his help. Secondly, I need to know me. I need to know me in order to explain me to Jack. And you know, friends, there are lots of times that I don't know me. I don't know why I'm frustrated or why I'm depressed. And it's not fair, because if I can't explain me to Jack, of course he thinks whatever is going on is his fault. And that's not right. In fact, nothing is wrong is a phrase that should be stricken from any married couple's vocabulary. We have got to be able to get it out. But sometimes I don't know what's wrong. I found that one of the most valuable things that I can do is to go to God and get down on my knees and just say, "Help, Lord." And I pray that wonderful verse in James 1, verse 5, which says, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. He gives to all men liberally, and it shall be given him." Boy, I hang on to that. And I say, "Lord, I just need your wisdom to know what's going on inside of me. Help me." And God does. He gives me insights so that I can explain what's going on to Jack. I need to be a student of myself. But third, I need to really understand Jack. Ephesians 4:32 says in the Phillips translation, three wonderful little phrases that if we would take them to heart, just these three in our marriages, we'd have the best marriages going. It says this: be kind to one another. Be understanding. Compassionate is how the many other translations put it. But compassionate means putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. So be understanding. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. Just think of those three little things. Be kind to one another. little poem goes, they were single and went walking, and her heart did skip a beat. As she stumbled on the sidewalk, he murmured, "Careful, sweet. Now the wedding bells have rung." And when they walk the selfsame street, when she stumbles on the sidewalk, he just yells, "Pick up your feet." We are so often the least kind to those we love the most. And if you aren't convinced, just go through a supermarket and listen to mothers talking to their children. Be kind. Then it says to be understanding. That's a command from God. And you know the most wonderful, one of the most wonderful things about being a Christ one, a Christian, is that God never gives us a command that he does not give us the power to do. Aren't you glad? See, he wouldn't be an ethical God if he would give us commands that are impossible. And so we can know with the power of the Holy Spirit that he gives us that we can do what he's telling us to do. And he says, be understanding. Oh yes, we need to pray for wisdom. I think there are two prayers that we should pray frequently in our marriages. And one is that God would give us more love every day for one another, for our spouses. Charlie Shedd says, true love has no maximum. And I like that. Always new vistas ahead. And then we need to pray for wisdom. Because we're constantly changing, our spouses are constantly changing, we need to have that wisdom that comes from God. Be understanding. A man once said that a long life is barely enough for a man and a woman to understand each other. And to be understood is to love. The man who understands one woman is qualified to understand pretty well everything. And the reverse is true. Yet when Adam was lonely, God created for him not 10 friends, but one wife. And I'm glad. And then it says, be forgiving. Be as forgiving as God for Christ's sake has forgiven us. You know, there are some couples here in this room that's where you need to start. So often, my friends, and Jack and I have seen it over and over, we're hurt. So we build a little wall around that hurt, a little scar tissue, so you won't hurt me again. But then I am hurt again. And that wall goes up a little higher, and that scar tissue becomes a little thicker. And then we're hurt again and again and again and again until that wall is so high and so thick that we can't get through it. And friends, that's right, we can't get through it. It takes God himself and our willingness to let him to break through. And maybe that's where some of you need to just sit down together tonight after the meeting and say, you know, we've got a lot of walls. We need to forgive. And I want to forgive you as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven me. And how much has God, for Christ's sake, forgiven you? Everything. One man said, when we quarrel, my wife becomes historical. And his friend said, don't you mean hysterical? And he says, no, I mean historical. She brings up everything I ever did. And yet Proverbs 17:9 in the Living Bible says, love forgets mistakes. Nagging about them parts the best of friends. We want to get back to understanding. One minister's wife said this, if I could give one piece of advice, and only one, to wives everywhere, it would be this. Study your man. Study him as if he were some rare and strange and fascinating animal, which he is. Study his likes and dislikes, his strengths and weaknesses, his moods and mannerisms. Just loving a man is fine, but it's not enough. To live with one successfully, you have to know him. And to know him, you have to study him. Look around you and decide how many of the best marriages you know are ones where a wife, in a deep sense, actually knows her husband better than he knows himself. Knows what pleases him. Knows what upsets him. Knows what makes him laugh or makes him angry. Knows when he needs encouragement. Knows when he's too charged up about something and needs to be held back. knows, in other words, exactly what makes him tick. What a challenge for wives. What a challenge for husbands. Because the same is true for husbands, to know your wives like that. Now I'm going to just, in the next 5 minutes, begin to tell you a couple, four things actually, that are differences between Jack and me. These are just jumping off spots for you to begin to identify your own self and your spouse's. As I'm telling you these, I am not talking about man-woman differences. I'm talking about people differences. So if you men find yourself identifying with me, it does not mean you are feminine. And if you women find yourself identifying with Jack, it does not mean you are masculine. It just means you're different than Jack and me. Our whole point is just to get you thinking in, yeah, who are we? And how can we fit together? How can we begin to make these differences work for us rather than against us? Jack is a very objective person. And I am a very subjective person. Sounds simple. To Jack, a fact is a fact is a fact. To me, a fact is slightly more than a fact or slightly less than a fact, depending on what mood I'm in. Jack can take a detached view of things, and I have a hard time being detached about anything. Now, the implications of this are great in our relationship. And friends, we stress these differences simply because I have spent hours, days, weeks crying about these differences because I thought in my mind that they weren't just different, that they were really wrong. Jack, we'd have a couple coming over for dinner and the couple might say, where did you get this meat? And Jack will say, well, down at the Safeway. And I'll say, why? What's wrong with it? Jack will say, the Joneses are busy and can't come tomorrow. And I'll say, I wonder what we did to offend them. There's hardly a statement goes by that I don't take it personally. Now, people who are subjective do not take teasing well. There is absolutely no way that Jack can come in the door and say, hi, chubby, that I don't take it personally. Now, sometimes the subjectiveness borders on the ridiculous. Heard about one husband who said to his wife, honey, you have been working so hard all week, cooking and cleaning and taking care of the kids. Tonight, I'm going to take you out for a good dinner. Some of you got that. She burst into tears. Why? She had picked up on the good dinner. What have I been cooking for you all week? Now, she needed to know her husband so she wouldn't do that. But nevertheless, it's tough for us subjective people. Jack is essential-minded, and I am detail-minded. Jack focuses in on the main subject, the most important thing to be considered. And I think in detail, and obviously I talk that way too. This had important implications in our relationship. Jack used to travel and go to conferences, and I would stay home with our small daughter, the dog, the washing machine, dial a prayer. You know how it is. And so when he would come home, I would be starved for adult communication, and I would greet him at the door with a hug and a kiss, and I would say, honey, tell me all about that conference. And he would tell me all about that conference in 10 minutes flat. And I would think, oh, he doesn't care enough to tell me about that conference. And if he doesn't care enough to tell me about that conference, then he must not love me the way I long to be loved. In my mind, friends, it always goes back to that. On the other hand, I would start to tell him about the neighbor down the street. You know, his wife is that one, her hair is about down to here, but she wears it sort of up swirly like this, and she goes to the beauty parlor about every week, and by this time I look at my husband and his eyes are glazed and sort of crossed, and I think, he's not listening, and I'm right. And I think, If he's not listening, then he's not interested in what I'm interested in. And if he's not interested in what I'm interested in, then he must not love me the way I long to be loved. Now, friends, I was wrong on both counts. And when I began to study my husband, I saw why. You see, when Jack told me about that conference in 10 minutes flat, in his way, he had told me all about the conference. Why? He had zeroed in on the essentials, the most important things to be considered. Now, over the years, he's learned that I want to hear some of those really important things, like who's going to have a baby and who got engaged and the best meal he had and some of those really important things. On the other hand, I want you to know that I have learned how to boil a juicy four-hour story down to 10 minutes flat. But the flip side of that coin is that there are sometimes he knows I've just got to get it all out. And he's trained himself to listen. And I love him for it. And not only do I love him for it, but it has helped him to relate to the 50% of the people in the world that are like me. And I am learning to relate to the 50% of the people in the world that are like him. Praise God, we can do that. Now, detail-minded people, of course, are impressed by and distracted by the little things in life. And this can drive an essential-minded person straight up the wall. Jack will say, that's a good-looking car, but how does it run? And I'll say, I just don't like the color. Jack will say, I like that speaker's ideas. And I'll say, did you notice his shirt matched his tie? Now, I'm exaggerating, but not a whole lot. And it wasn't that I didn't notice the speaker's ideas. It was just that I noticed something else, too. Not wrong, my friends. Just different. Well, if you don't remember anything else from what we're saying tonight, just remember that little phrase. It is not wrong. It is just different. And if we can learn to take those differences to complete each other, we're going a long way toward learning the kind of love that really is agape love.
Okay, how are you alike and how are you different as a couple? We're going to take the next 3 minutes and 20 seconds, perfectionist that I am, and introduce you to the handouts. You've got green sheets. List ways in which you and your spouse are alike. Sit right where you are. Just jot down two or three ways that you and your spouse are alike. Then go on to the second one. List ways in which you are different from one another. Just put down two or three ways that you're different. Just do that right now. That'll only take you 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Is between now and when you come to the meeting in the morning. I think it starts at 9 o'clock. We'd like to have you take about 10 or 15 minutes, whatever length of time it takes you, to share your answers with each other. Talk about what you have written down. And if you haven't had time in the 3 minutes and 20 seconds to get enough answers down, why, you know, before you go to bed tonight, take a little more, take a couple of more minutes and jot down some more. But sometime between now and tomorrow morning, just take 10 or 15 minutes and talk about your answers. Objectively? Yeah, objectively. Please, not at a couples conference. Don't get in a fight over this. But I realize that it's very possible that emotions could be generated as a result of talking about something like this. And if that happens, why, you know, just back away from it. But sometime before the conference is over, talk about it and share your thoughts and ideas and your answers with each other. Now, this is just a little sample of what is contained in these handouts. And tomorrow we'll give you a couple more just very brief assignments so that you'll get a taste of it. And our hope is that you will take these home with you and over the next several weeks work all the way through the whole thing. And we'll explain a little bit more how to do that tomorrow. So thanks for your attention. Have a good night's sleep.